Hello, everybody. What's up? Welcome back to Necromaniacs Podcast, our first podcast of 2019. And it's a bit of an auspicious occasion. It is episode number 35, and it happens to be the fifth anniversary of Necromaniacs Podcast. Mike?
Feels like yesterday that we started doing this.
Yes, it does. It really does. But 2014, if you compare the number of podcasts, if you took a statistic probably of maybe not even just horror podcasts, of podcast period in 2014 to 2019, I think you would see a staggering difference. I can't even measure probably the number of podcasts that are out there right now.
Yeah, it's a big medium these days. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that all of them are good either.
No.
Especially in the horror genre, man. I can only think of a handful that I really like.
There's a lot. There's quite a bit out there. I've been loving, I'm a big Brian Keene fan, the writer, horror writer Brian Keene. I've finally got really into his podcast, The Horror Show, which is cool, but it's not about horror movies. It really kind of talks mostly about horror novelist people and like him and his crew and like what's going on in his life, which for me is cool. I'm a big fan. But a lot of the times I don't know what the hell he's talking about because I only like him. I'm not reading tons of horror books. I'm reading his books, Jack Ketchum, and maybe just some random others once in a while. So it's kind of a different kind of podcast for me, but I like it.
So is Ketchum's, or I'm sorry, Brian Keene's podcast, is it too like personal for you? Or
no, that's the thing. I almost wish it was more personal. He's been doing it so long. He has so many episodes in the can that apparently a lot of my questions and things I wanted to hear have already been said already.
Oh, wow.
But okay. I like him because he does get personal about his life, and he'll have his son on. Like, he doesn't want anyone to know his son's name, so he has a nickname for his son. His son is like 10. And he just seems like, I met him back in 2013 at a signing, and he was so cool and so nice. And he just comes off as just like this guy that is like one of your friends,
Yeah, that's
who has
cool.
a podcast, but he just happens to be one of the biggest, horror writers of the last 15, 20 years. So
as far as horror goes and podcasts, I really like the Double Murder podcast. But they put out even less episodes than we do, man.
Wow. See, now that's the thing about us. I will say, We do it when we can. We want to do it more. We will try to do it more. But ultimately, we do it when our schedules allow. But, 35 in 5 years, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of that number.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I'm proud of, of all the things we've done. And for this episode, we're doing something a little different. We're doing two music-related films. One is a new film based on true events, and the other is a documentary based on the same true events.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about this movie, Lords of Chaos.
Yep.
In some circles, they even refer to it as a horror film.
Yes, because, the three instances of violence in the movie, I think, are definitely right up there with some of the sickest scenes you'll probably see in a horror movie. That's probably why, especially in like the last 10, 20 years. Those particular scenes are pretty bad, but, we're going to be covering Lords of Chaos, and we're going to be covering, the 2008 documentary Until the Light Takes Us. Now, if you don't know, Mike and I have been listening to black metal for a pretty long time. I mean, I've actually been listening to it for almost 25 years this year, actually.
Yeah, I'm right up there with you, man.
And
somewhere at some point in the 90s, I started.
I got into it pretty much via the Kerrang article that is discussed in the movie. Because my brother Kevin at the time was buying Kerrang magazine every week at Zigzag Records on Avenue U in Brooklyn, which is long since closed. This cool heavy metal record store. They would get Kerrang. They would get it late because it was in the UK. Like, they wouldn't get, they wouldn't get the right week every week. They'd be like 2 or 3 weeks behind. But he would buy it religiously, my brother Kevin. And I would read his Kerrangs because, they had good stuff in it. It was good shit happening at the time in metal and whatnot. And I was a death metal fan. And I did not know anything about black metal other than it was the name of a Venom album. You know, I mean, yeah. I didn't know it as a genre. I knew death metal as a genre. And the first article about it was not about the killings. It was about the arsons. And it was more about, you know, it had like Emperor in it. It had Burzum. It had Mayhem. And it had even had a sidebar about it, like Impaled Nazarene. The killings had not took place yet, actually. It was more about kind of the hype, you know, and like the church burnings, basically. And that totally piqued my interest. And back then I was in junior college and I did a metal radio show at Kingsborough College. And I used to get, you know, promo CDs from metal labels. And I got the Beherit Oath of the Black Blood CD from JL America around the same time I got the Morpheus Descends first record. Like, I got a bunch of their releases. And, you know, that was billed as black metal. That was my first actual, you know, exposure to what black metal was. And I have to say, I didn't like it at first. I actually thought Beherit sucked at first. It took me about a year to appreciate them, maybe even a little more than a year. Because you put that alongside Morbid Angel and Obituary and Carcass and everything that was going on at that time, I was like, this is a bunch of noisy garbage. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, because I think similar to you, I had read the same article, but I was, at the time, I was playing in this band, and we went down to the office that our record label had, and they had a bunch of promotional copies of magazines. So we, you know, we were heading out on tour. We grabbed a couple of magazines to read, and one of them was had that same article in it.
Wow.
And later on that same tour, we were playing in Gainesville, Florida, and we were playing at this house show, and everyone, and we were staying there too. And everyone was like, oh man, you know, the our roommate's a real, he's a real fucking negative guy. We don't, you know, you know, everyone hates him. You know, he's probably going to move out. It turns, so this guy comes, he's probably going to be coming back tonight. So just, you know, stay clear of him, right? So this dude comes back and he's like a total metalhead. He had like an Emperor banner in his fucking room, okay? And he like wasn't familiar with the band, but he knew that we were into like metal and, you know, darker kind of stuff. So I actually became the guy that you were supposed to stay away from. He and I actually bonded.
Of course. Yeah.
So we were like hanging out in his room and he was playing all this stuff, all the stuff I just read about.
Interesting. Wow. See, that's the thing. Like back then, I'm going to say I didn't hear the Norway bands until 94 when Century Media put out the Century Black sublabel.
Yeah.
And the first two things they put out were The Split with Emperor and Enslaved.
Yes.
And De Mysteriestum Satanas, the first Mayhem record. And that just fucking floored me. And I'm like, I can finally get to hear these bands, you know? Again, before that, I think I had already had gotten Cradle of Filth's first record. Like, there was just certain bands I was able to get a hold of from friends, you know? But the Norway bands, it wasn't that easy to get their physical, you know, CDs just yet. Until mid-late 94, early 95, actually,
yeah,
in America.
Well, that next day in Gainesville, we went to a record store and I found a cassette copy of the Emperor Enslaved Split.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I picked that up and I was like, I'm not going to say I was all about it. I was like you because, you know, I was into like, you know, like death metal, you know, noise rock, you know, stuff like the Melvins and all that sort of stuff. But also, you know, a lot of death metal. And it didn't grab me at first. A couple of years, like a year later, I was working at the Newbury Comics warehouse, okay? And now, you know, you have like a cost plus 5% discount
there. Oh, wow, nice.
So suddenly, I was able to buy all these records for very cheap. You know, Philosophum by Burzum. That's right, I said Burzum. Nice. I said Burzum, that's right.
Yeah.
I have all the Burzum records.
So do I. They're a great band.
And it doesn't make either one of us neo-fascists or anything like that.
No, not at all.
You know, the Emperor in the Night Side Eclipse, like all that stuff. In the Night Side Eclipse is when I really started, it really grabbed me because that was like this more technical kind of like, it was more like death metal in some ways.
See, that's the thing. Like to me, it was hearing that the kickoff of the Emperor Enslaved, hearing the first track on that, I went, holy shit.
Yeah.
It was just the atmosphere. It gave me the chills and it just... I mean, they just had me, you know, black metal had me for life and here it is, you know, 25 years later and I'm still listening to black metal and I still support black metal. And it's just unbelievable how this story has, you know, kind of, the legs it has had. I mean, you cut to like 98, the book of Lords of Chaos comes out. And I bought that right when it came out.
Yeah,
I remember.
Me too.
I mean, I was, you know, I'd been listening to these bands for years. I was like, oh man, this book is going to be great. And then I remember in 2003, they put out the revised version. I bought that. And it's just like, to me, it was just very strange to like, maybe not strange, but it was just like, just I had just like an odd feeling watching people, you know, play these people as opposed to just watching interviews with these people or reading interviews with, you know, from the people themselves. You know, to seeing actors portray them and seeing some of it kind of done in an, I don't know, kind of a goofy way to me was just like, wow, like, I guess this is what happens when things get popular. This is what happens when things get big. And black metal, let's face it, I don't think was ever supposed to be big. Like, it was never supposed to be, these weren't supposed to be household name bands.
No.
You know?
And that's something that we're foreshadowing for the set for our second film. You know, definitely
yes,
is
exactly.
that lack of expectation, you know.
Yeah.
The thing I found interesting is that Lords of Chaos is coming out, came out now, as opposed to like, because do you remember, I think it was like 2007 or 2008, that's when I feel like black metal was like really in like the popular consciousness.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this movie is very late. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of late in the game.
And what was funny was that Until the Light Takes Us, some of the reviews of that were like, this is really good. It's great. It's a decade late.
Yeah.
And that was, it was a decade late. And now this is even 2 decades late. But shit happens. I mean, movies get made at their own fucking pace, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Movies aren't cheap. You have to get rights. You have to get money, actors, etc. I imagine it is extremely difficult to get a movie like this in a theater. And they did, you know? So, I mean, I respect that. But getting into the actual, you know, movie itself, it is directed by Jonas Åkerlund, who has made most of his, you know, career in making really good music videos. He's made 2 of what I think are the greatest videos ever, one being Prodigy's Smack My Bitch Up video, which is unbelievable, and Metallica's Turn the Page video, which is another one of my favorite videos ever, actually.
He also did that movie Spun, too.
Yes, he did.
And that newer film on Netflix, which I found totally unwatchable, Polar.
Oh, I have not seen that yet.
I
want to see it, though. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it's got Mads Mikkelsen, who
I want to see
his, you know? And, you know, it's nothing you haven't seen before, but it has that weird, like, frenetic sort of, you know, sort of atmosphere like Spun has, you know what
right.
I mean? How it's like real twitchy. And I feel like some of that transferred into Lords of Chaos a little bit.
Gotcha.
Like Mike mentioned before, it's based on, I'm not even going to say it's based on the Lords of Chaos book because it kind of isn't really.
Yeah, because most of the Lords of Chaos book, I mean, it goes in so many directions and it talks about hundreds of things. And the funniest thing is seeing these people on social media going, I hope it's like the book.
Which like, it's what? Impossible for it to be like the book.
What book did you read? Like,
and that,
hope
that
it's
book,
like the book?
And that book was compiled by Michael Moynihan, neo-fascist at one point in his career.
Blood Axis guy. I mean, he's, you know, interesting character. I don't know what he's up to recently. I feel like I don't even know if he's still doing that sort of thing.
I haven't heard anything by him, but he did have that Storm Records and Dominion Press, and he was, you know, he was like a prolific guy for a while, regardless of his political bent. Mm-hmm. And I guess since then, he's denounced his neo-fascism, you know.
And Derdrick Soderlund, who he co-wrote the book with, a Norwegian fella. And yeah, I mean, if you know the book, it's weird to hear people say that. Like, I don't know, I feel like, did you read the same book I did? But anyway, music is by Sigur Rós, which was actually, you know, the background music was pretty cool.
Icelandic.
Yeah, Icelandic cat.
Yeah.
It came out in New York it's weird. It's been playing in New York for like a week or so, but then I just saw recently that it's getting released again in certain cities across America. So I guess, I mean, you know, it's playing it mainly like, I would say, independent theaters, but Alamo Drafthouse is pretty mainstream in the spoke of things.
They're not in every city though.
They're not in every city. That's true.
You know, it's still. I mean, you know, you and I living in the cosmopolitan mecca of New York City.
That is true.
We think it's commonplace for places like the Alamo to exist.
Yes,
but it is still. You know, it's not everywhere.
It's not.
Know
what I mean? But it is now everywhere on demand, which is where I think everyone is seeing it right now. And then somebody posted, I saw it's already on YouTube for free somewhere,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, probably, so yeah.
That's, you know, the way it goes. The movie stars Rory Culkin as Euronymous, Emery Cohen as Varg Vikernes, Anthony De La Torre as Hellhammer, Sky Ferreira as Anne Marrett, Jack Kilmer, which is Val Kilmer's son, as Dead, Valder Skarsgård as Faust, and smaller roles go to Sam Coleman as Metallion, who had the wonderful fanzine, which I used to actually order issues from back in the day. Jonathan Barnwell as Necro Butcher, and Wilson Gonzalez Orkinschneck as Blackthorn. I don't know. I mean, look, did I hate this movie? I didn't hate this movie. I enjoyed aspects of this movie. I feel like it probably wasn't geared at someone like me in a way who knows a lot, you know, maybe even too much for his own good, so to speak, and was kind of analyzing things a little bit because that's just who I am. I feel like Jonas Askerlin, like you would think he would, his heart was in, I don't know, I think he was in a bit of a weird place for me, because he was in Bathory. His time in Bathory was pretty brief, though.
For like a year, he was in Bathory.
Yeah.
And he gets a lot of mileage for
that. Yeah, he really does. You know? And people say, well, he's an insider to black metal. I don't even know.
He's in a different generation from those
other
guys.
Yeah, he's much
older. And he's Swedish as opposed to Norwegian.
Right. So I don't know. That's a tiny bit of a stretch. He's semi-insider. And he's made his career doing videos for very big bands. You know what I'm saying? He didn't make his career doing videos for Autopsy.
No.
And you know, Carcass. You know what I'm saying? He's a pretty, you know, slick guy, in my opinion. He's
totally
a pro.
Yeah.
But I just feel like some of the scenes and some of the dialogue and...
I just want to weigh in real quick about Jonas Ackerlund, too. Mm-hmm. Just like, he hasn't done anything musically since that one year that he was in Bathory either. You know what I mean? It's not like he's some, you know, he's a guy who's putting active and putting out records for the last 25, 30 years. And, you know, he's been on the road and,
right,
you know, he's like, he just was in a band that was very obscure for a year.
Yeah.
That
when they were at their most obscure. Yeah.
Yeah, that became legendary 10 years, 15, 20 years later. And the rest of his, since then, he's been doing these, like, you know,
Lady Gaga too.
Yeah, I mean, elite quality work, just not, but that doesn't make him an insider into the black metal world.
Well, I don't think he is either. Yeah.
And also, those are, you know, like I mentioned before, he's a different wave of black metal.
Right,
you know?
First wave. Yep.
Yeah, and even the guys, like if you read interviews with Venom, they don't even acknowledge the second wave bands, really.
No.
You know?
But that's almost to be expected, because, you know, you read interviews with Fenris and he loves to kind of mock the black metal that came after, you know, his time. What I did like about the movie was I think they actually got the look down of the characters. They everyone looks good. Everyone looks like the people they portrayed, I think. I mean, for the most part.
I heard that Eric Danielson from Watain was retained as a consultant to get all the patches.
I would believe it.
Right, and the studs and spikes and everything.
I would believe that, because the shirts they wore and the jeans and the jackets and the boots looked great. They even had the right t-shirts for the right characters. Like, it was very interesting in that respect.
The disdain for the scorpions.
Yes.
It's like a very, you know, sort of like subtle thing in there.
Although, there are things that were completely made up, like the Scorpions thing. That is not true at all, actually. That never happened. The scene where Varg is drinking chocolate milk, that never happened. You know, the girls, the groupies thing, also you know, they threw that in there.
You mean that Varg wasn't a smashing mad sniz?
I even talked to a friend of mine who knows even more about this stuff and is like, yeah, that's completely made up. So I don't know. I mean, you need to make an entertaining movie. And I think it was a entertaining movie. No? I mean,
well, for me, I've been hearing about this movie being made for at least 10 years.
Yeah, right? Me too.
And then originally there was a different director connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Palfrey apparently had something to do with some early version of this film.
Well, his name is still in the credits. Adam Palfrey, who passed away last year, owned Feral House Books, who put out Lords of Chaos.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, he has a piece of this movie.
And yeah,
so
and also Feral House. Adam Palfrey is one of these guys who's like a a documentarian, historian of obscure stuff like this, like, you know, cultural things like black metal and the skinhead movement and mm-hmm. like Oi and noise rock and, you know, Satanism.
Yeah, he's
and
definitely
stuff.
A guy who's his whole life was at the forefront of edgy music, you could just say. No, I mean,
yeah,
totally.
So then when the trailers started coming out, that's when I started getting nervous, because I was like, the trailers I thought were terrible for this movie. They made it look like a fucking total joke bullshit film, in my opinion.
And two of them showed scenes not in the movie. I don't know if you were able to figure that out. The beating up of Dead as a child, the schoolyard bullying scene, that wasn't in the theatrical cut of the movie. We didn't see that scene. That scene is online. And then there's a scene which I can't believe was taken out of the movie. Basically, towards the mid end of the movie, they show Mayhem making Dave Mysterious dumps Athanas, but they kind of go right into it, and we don't know who this man singing for them is after Dead has committed suicide, and who this man is that has replaced him that is singing in the studio, and that man is Attila, who sang on the record, but how does the viewer, who doesn't know anything about black metal, supposed to know that? They took that out of the movie.
See, that's the things. There are things like that that were very confusing. Because, like, I agree with you. I don't think that this film was made for fans. Like, you know, like you and I, people who are deep into it and know about all the bands and all the minutia of, like, what happened and all the read the original Lords of Chaos, you know, book. And for them not to set up who that guy was is, like, a complete narrative mistake. It's an error in the narrative, I think.
Yeah.
There's no context for who this guy is.
You could
you and I knew who he was, though.
And the kicker is that it's Attila's son in real life who looks exactly like his father. So that was kind of cool. You know, I mean, they did some cool things like that in the movie. There are things kind of left out in the bigger picture, too. Like the existence of Emperor is left out of the movie. And Faust, who is in this movie, and his murder is in this movie, there's no mention of him being in a band.
Yeah, he's just
hanging
around.
I have a funny feeling that there's a real reason for that Emperor did not want their former drummer kind of dragging down the name of the band. That's one take. But Samoth, the guitarist of Emperor, was a member of the Inner Circle, was around for all of this, went to prison himself for arson, and he's left out of this movie as well.
Yeah, there's you know, in some of the reading I've done about it, there's a lot of conflicting things too, because you know, there was this thing where the members of Mayhem weren't into it, and then later on they were like,
right, yes,
you know,
yes,
and then there was that famous infamous video of Varg on his YouTube page where mm-hmm. he's just totally denouncing the film.
Oh yeah, he's never been on board and is still not on board, and pointed out all the things that they've made up. And I am, you know, prone to believing him because, well, he was there. So, you know, the movie's about him. So I'm going to probably say that he's telling the truth with the things that they made up. But if you could look it up online and find the many articles and metal websites where Mayhem and Necro Butcher in particular was against this movie. Yeah. However, I found out that was all kind of happening before the scenes were shot, like before the kickoff of the movie really begun, and that apparently Jonas Askelin and Mayhem were able to kind of get together before the cameras started rolling, and before the production began, and they actually did have a hand in the movie. So at one point, yes, they were against the movie. They didn't want it to be made. They wanted no involvement. But apparently they, you know, they had a change of heart, and they became a part of the movie, from what I understand.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's Mayhem, you know, music throughout the whole film.
It is, yes, because initially there was not supposed to be, and there is indeed 7 Mayhem tracks heard in this movie.
The other thing, though, is they also have left out, like, a lot. I mean, Dark Throne's not really discussed.
Right. You know. Now, Fenris repeatedly said, I don't want any part of it, and that, you know... that stuck. You know what I'm saying? He had no part of it. There was no Dark Throne music used. So, but I don't think they're able to stop someone from having a character in the movie with that name. You know what I'm saying? Just
right,
like
there was a
if someone wanted to write a
you
know, a book about tombs, they legally kind of could, just because, you know what I'm saying? Mm. And say it's an unauthorized book, but they could still write the book.
Right.
The same way, I guess, they were able to have that character named Fenris, who... Again, his name is in the credits, but they at no point introduce him, and he doesn't really say very much.
Yeah, he's not a player, really.
No,
you know what
no,
I mean?
It's kind of weird.
But Fenris actually, you know, was like one of the main guys in that scene
yes,
back then.
Yes,
he
was
know?
Around for a lot of the shit, too. Exactly.
And, you know, and then once, and you mentioned no mention of, you know, of Emperor, and Faust
no.
was in Emperor.
I'm wondering you know? What that's all about.
I mean, I'm sure they were like, you know, they probably had their people drop some
yep.
paperwork.
Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Leave us out. But Varg... being a convicted felon, a convicted mm-hmm. murderer, mm-hmm. I feel like his story, similar to like Charles Manson's story or something like that, is part of the
record.
Public record.
Yes.
So they have
yes.
like full license to do whatever they want with his story.
I think they were, yeah. And the thing is this, though, if you, I just feel like they went out of their way to punk him out and out of their way to make him look like you know, a tool. You know what I'm saying? When in reality... he's the one who was the man of action. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was the one who did things, who started burning down the churches, and you know, was more than just talk. Euronymous was all talk and no action.
Well, they were clear about that in
yeah.
the film, you know. But I believe definitely that they were trying to, like, dig at him.
Oh, totally.
And even in his video, the fact that, I mean, they you know, cast a Jewish guy to play him.
Yeah,
and we know that Varg
may or
not,
may not be on per. I mean, they might have just that's he just happened to be.
But we also know Varg is,
job.
Is
right,
not
exactly,
fond of
yeah.
Jewish people.
He's not a big fan, although he has actually on his YouTube channel said that he's not a Nazi or a white supremacist. He had a whole thing about it. So, but
that's kind of like a very fashionable thing to do if you're a neo-fascist, though, man.
Yeah,
just
true.
Say that you're not.
Say
that.
You're not. Yeah, but he. But the thing is this: I just think. I don't know how much of that was a let's get a Jewish, like, you know what I'm saying? I think
yeah.
they picked the man who they thought was the best for the job, but that's, you know. But he wasn't that great, actually. I don't think the guy was that great who played Varg. I mean, I thought he was all right.
I thought the acting was mediocre in general, to be
for
honest.
For everybody, Culkin probably was the best actor in the entire movie. And even his acting, I mean, it wasn't amazing, but he was the best, I thought. He was the most pro, no?
I think Culkin was good. I think Skarsgård was good as Faust. You know, very expressive,
yes.
very expressive
but
sort
we
of
don't
acting.
Know, again, one of my problems with the movie is only Varg and Euronymous get any kind of depth. There's pretty much we don't know anything about Faust except that the movie has decreed that he might have been a closeted homosexual when all these years, by the way, and everything I've read and seen about, you know, this whole thing, was that ever even, like, on the table? Like, you know what I'm saying? Apparently, he killed that man because he wanted to know what it was like to kill someone, and that man happened to be homosexual.
Well, they also foreshadowed his desire to kill someone about, you know, he made the statement about plunging, you know, what it would feel like to plunge a
right,
knife into
right.
a body, you know.
But they added that whole other dimension, though, about him himself. Possibly, you know what I'm saying? Like, I felt like
I wouldn't find it beyond the realm of possibility that Bard Faust, and this is just speaking objectively, was someone who had homosexual feelings.
But where did you get that from?
Well, all right, you're in the wood. You're in like a cruising spot or something like that with like a gay guy.
But we don't know. See, that's the thing. I feel like that was made up.
I think that if you, I think it's in Lords of Chaos, actually. I don't think so.
Yeah, I'd have to. See, that's the thing. I haven't read it since around 2004. Yeah,
I think if you reread, I remember reading Lords of Chaos back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And when that scene came, that part came up, I thought, oh, well, obviously the guy's probably has, you know, some sort of curiosities or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because I knew a guy, one of my roommates, who that was his trip. He, you know, has since come out as being someone interested in, you know, being gay. But he had a hard time with that. And he was also very violent, a skinhead, you know, all this kind of stuff. And like, that's all I'm saying.
I guess
is that,
maybe I heard it and forgot, but I just feel like I never heard that about him. But funny thing about that guy is, and you know, the Norwegian prison system. I mean, of course, Varg has been out of jail for a while and lives in France with his wife and six kids in the middle of nowhere. But Faust actually played the show at Vitus with his band. Like he, you know, you're able to murder someone. And then, you know, get out after a certain amount of time and just live your life. Isn't that unbelievable?
I know. They're very... Well, that's a testament as to the kind of society that Norway has.
I guess so.
I mean, there's not a lot of violence,
amazing.
I imagine, there. And hate crimes and things like that.
And neither Faust nor Varg have ever killed anyone ever again. So maybe they're doing something right in Norway. Maybe.
I just think that they're young people. And if you think about... when you're 19 years old or 20 or whatever, and you're surrounding yourself with just all this darkness and
negativity
and everyone's constant, you know, all the testosterone's going crazy and everyone's trying to like one up each other, you know, oh yeah, man, I'm darker than you. I'm like more, you know, I'm more against Christianity than you are. So I'm going to go burn some churches down. And one guy's like, well, hold on a second. I know, you know, it's just that adolescent, that early that young man anger and dejection and a response to living in a suppressive society that, you know, is a Christian society. You know, my impression in Norway is that it's similar to Poland, where Poland is like a Catholic fucking thing, you know, and that's the way I read that.
Well,
you know what
and
I mean?
Varg's response to that was to burn it to the ground. And his whole trip kind of to this day still is paganism, is about the original, you know, Europe's original religion. That's what should be in Europe. And that's what, that's, you know, it's interesting that he has not let go of those beliefs, you know, whereas a lot of people, their beliefs at 17, 18 change. His belief in that respect is still the same.
I think a lot of those people still have those beliefs. Like, you know, I think like a lot of the black metal people still have like, you know, very strong pagan, you know, beliefs.
If they were pagan, but a lot of the thing is, I feel like most of these guys were flirting with Satanism, whereas Varg was about paganism. It's two different things, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I feel like Fenris has talked about pagan religions and, you know, like since then, and the same, well, Emperor had more of like a satanic thing. I
right,
mean, later on, they were not, I mean, now, late, you know, later, they just were like a interested in being a metal band, really.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You know, enslaved are very much into like the pagan Norse mythology type stuff, you know.
And then Immortal invented their own trip, you know.
Yeah.
They were never satanic. They just, if you read those lyrics, they were just kind of on their own, their whole mythological world that they created.
I feel like the Satan stuff really came with the Swedish sort of bands, really. A lot of the Swedish bands were like more satanic, I think, than the Norwegian bands.
Yes. I mean, to a degree, I think you're kind of right. I mean, I just think that it was what they were rebelling against at the time. And I think Euronymous, he was like 5 years older than everybody. That's the other thing. He was like the ringleader.
Yeah.
Because of his age and because Mayhem came out in like 84. You know what I'm saying? They were like the big kind of local band, you could say. They were like the band that everyone looked up to because they had Vinyl out. They had Death Crush out. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, at the time, death metal was huge and all of those guys were death metal fans first, you know? And then Euronymous kind of got them all to kind of up the ante, really, which is interesting.
My take on that too is like, it's like, you know how like all the punks listened to like classic rock, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like back in the day, like, you know, I love Scorpions, I love Rainbow and all those bands.
Right.
I feel like death metal was like the classic rock for like those early black metal guys.
Well, sure, yeah.
You know, where they were like, you know, they were into like, you know, all the bands that, you know, whatever, Entombed,
death and thrash, and, you know, absolutely,
thrash and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, Napalm Death and everything, but they just wanted to go darker, the same way like punks were like, we're gonna reject Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and we're gonna do this, and then the, you know, black metalers are like, well, we're rejecting colorful album covers, you know, technical playing, production,
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No sweatpants, like that kind of stuff. And we're doing this thing, which is black and white,
starkness.
It was
the rediscovery of Venom and discovering Bathory and, like, you know, just kind of like bringing it back. You know what I'm saying? Like, also how punk rock was like the return to rock and roll. Black metal was the return to, like, you know, real
like Celtic
metal,
Frost.
Music.
And,
exactly.
Yeah, what they thought of as like real metal, like the real spirit of it.
Exactly.
So I mean, I always, like, you know, thought that was like a cool thing about black metal too, is that it was very raw and there was like, you know, it had that punk vibe too, which is like, I'm, you know, I love punk and hardcore too, you know, and as a kid, I was way into like Sabbath and, you know, Dio and all this other stuff. And then I got into like punk, you know, Bad Brains and all this other stuff, you know, Black Flag, DOA, you know, the Circle Jerks. And that became all about that. And I didn't want anything to do with like the older bands.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but then if you look at Dark Throne's career, it's like Dark Throne has had, I don't know how many fucking records they have out at this point.
About 15.
But they have like, they started that sound. Okay, they started as a death metal band,
very technical, kind of weird,
Soulside
interesting
journey.
Death metal band. Yeah, they're a good death metal band.
Then they developed that sound of like Transylvanian
Blaze
in Northern
Hunger. Sky. Yeah, what happened was they just, I don't know, they the damn Bathory fucking records, man. That's what happened. That's really what happened.
But then they went over the course. They had some mid-period records which sounded like Discharge. You know, like,
they're punkish black metal. Yes,
and then they have a very heavy nod
heavy metal, black
towards
metal.
Heavy metal Motorhead. And there's this one track that's on FOAD that sounds like fucking Kiss, man.
Yeah, they've done some interesting stuff. And then their last record, their most recent record, they've kind of settled kind of into like maybe bringing back a little more of the black metal, but this black metal, heavy metal thing, they've kind of really settled into it. And I think it's their shit. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like they've kind of created, once again, their own kind
of
sound.
Yeah, they've melded all these styles into something that's like
Arctic
truly
Thunder, by the way. That's the name of the
Arctic
record.
Thunder,
it's great.
Which
it's
no
great.
One, you know, when that record came out, no one paid attention to it.
No, it's very good.
And that's that was
strong.
One of my top five albums of the year, man.
I like it. It's kind of just enough heavy metal, just enough black metal, and it loses some of the goofiness of maybe some of the prior records, you know? But they're coming out with something new this year. Looking forward to what that's going to be. But I mean, the thing is, I don't know. Some of the scenes were very cringy, very Beavis and Butthead-y, very Wayne's World-y. Part of me, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, look, they were young, heavy metal teenagers. I'm sure they weren't 100% serious all the time, but these guys did some serious shit. I think some of the dialogue and, you know, attitudes were a bit of a stretch, but
a lot of it was because it was in English.
Yeah. And the casting of
American actors,
100% non Norwegians, which was kind of weird.
See, I kind of wish that it was my hope that for this film would have been that it was like a foreign film, a film made in Europe with all European actors.
Right.
And like, I would even be down to do this thing all in subtitles. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That would have been great.
Because it is kind of like a Norwegian cultural film.
Now,
it could have been, at least.
I think it also could have worked as like a multi-part Netflix or, you know, Amazon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that they didn't talk about. And there's so much more to tell and so much more story. And they could have given a bit more meat to everybody. But you know what? Like I said, I mean, I watch movies and enjoy them. I don't make movies. I know it takes a lot to make them, though. And I know that this was probably a very difficult thing to get, you know, ultimately produced and greenlit and backed. I would say I give it a 3 out of 5. 3 because it is worth seeing once, especially if you're a fan of this music, you know, or if you're a metal fan, or if you've always been curious about this story. But if you're looking for some more factual things, you're not really going to find it. And if you're looking for any type of historic black metal, Norwegian black metal thing, you're not really going to find that either. This is a bit more on the entertainment side, and on the, you know, the suicide of dead, the Faust murder and the murder of Euronymous, that is definitely something for the horror fans. Would you
agree? Yeah, they were very brutal, especially the whole surrounding dead suicide, like his suicide, I thought was like interesting.
Yeah, I almost could barely watch it. It was that, I mean, you know.
It was unwatchable. Not unwatchable, but it was hard to watch.
Hard to watch, very hard to watch. Yeah,
and then just, it was very intimate, that whole scene.
And I imagine the reality was also just as disgusting. I mean, horrible. So yeah, I give it 3 out of 5. Saw it, probably don't really care to see it ever again.
I have a different take on it. When I first saw the film and I was leaving, I was like, yeah, I don't know. It was better than the trailers led on to be.
Yes.
But as time went by, I started liking it more, believe it or not. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. Interesting.
I think that I probably will either watch this or get some sort of physical copy of it at some point. If it has good, you know, extras.
Yeah, I would like to see the extras. I would like to see what didn't make it to the movie, aside from the two things we discussed.
Well, in trailers, we saw two things that didn't even make it into the final cut of the film.
Yeah, you know, I know. It could have benefited from a little more of the musical side, which is, you know, the reason why a lot of people are going to want to watch it, but it focused a bit more on, you know, other stuff.
I would have loved to have seen, if we were going to go the route of having an American, I mean, basically an American film. I mean, even though Ackerlund's, you know,
Swedish guy,
Scandinavian, mm-hmm. it's a fucking American movie, man. You know what I mean? Just him being Scandinavian doesn't make it a Scandinavian film.
Right.
You know, if we were going to go with a straight up good old US of A, I would love to have seen Jim Van Beber make this movie.
Yeah. That would be interesting.
You know, I mean, the way like he handled the Manson murders and, you know, his film about the Manson family.
Yeah, that was very, I mean, that's awesome.
You know, I think that, and Van Beber being someone who's probably more involved with heavy metal than Jonas Ackerlund, honestly, if you think about it, he's not in a band, but he's, you know, he's done Necrophagia videos. He's did a Down documentary.
Yeah.
He's done all sorts of stuff.
Worked with Anselmo.
Yeah, Phil Anselmo has been involved in his films. Like, there's,
yeah, that would have been an interesting choice. Yeah, I like that.
I just think that his style of filmmaking and his commitment to doing a good job, I think, would have made this film pretty awesome.
I agree. All right, which brings us to our next documentary, something that I think everybody who has seen Lords of Chaos should immediately see. It is the 2008 documentary Until the Light Takes Us, directed by Aaron Eitz and Audrey Ewell. I actually saw this in the theater in 2009. It came out in, you know, small, you know, select places with our friend Henry Yuan, Electric Assault Records, Henry.
Yep.
And, I mean,
we rent his van all the time.
Yes,
actually.
Yes. We loved this movie back then. I watched it again last night, and I think it still holds up very well. Now, it's kind of a strange animal, too, though, in a way. It came out at a time when I almost feel like people had just kind of stopped talking about this story, 2008, 2009. I mean, unless you were, of course, a big black metal fan. But, like, the hype and you know, behind everything had been years past. But I'll say in America, though, this was around the time where a bunch of bands in America were kind of making their bones. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like the era that this film came out was when black metal started crossing over into the hipster world.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, you'd have 100%. Guys with mustaches, like, into wearing Bergen
t-shirts.
When
it fell
t-shirts.
Into the wrong hands, in my
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah, when it fell into the wrong hands. I remember right around this time, I went to the Millennium Market in Williamsburg, mm-hmm. which is that location is no longer there now. Mm. And I saw a dude with a mustache and a Burzum t-shirt on.
And you were probably like, what
And I was
the
like,
hell?
What the fuck is this yeah, guy? Right. What is exactly. he, what's his story? You know, does he realize how controversial that shirt is? And does he even know the band?
Now, this movie, this documentary, it's a documentary. The main focus is on Gylfe Fenriz-Nagel of Dark Throne, of course, and Varg Vikernes of Burzum. The movie also has Hellhammer from Mayhem is in it. Demon as Annabeth from Immortal are in it. Garm from Ulver is in it a couple of times. Also, towards the end of it, has a bit of a very odd focus on Frost from Satyricon.
And 1349.
Yes, and 1349. And who, for some reason, chose to appear in silhouette. Faust is also in this.
Yeah.
He chose to appear in silhouette with a muffled voice. Interesting. And it shows him, he clearly has, you know, short hair and whatnot.
It's like he was in, like, the witness protection program.
Yeah, witness protection program, when he had already served his time and was already out of prison, which is kind of strange. This movie, it's artistic. It's artsy, you know? But at the same time, I don't know. I think it did a great job kind of showing you who Varg and Fenriz are and were. Would you, like...
I partially agree.
Partially. Okay. Okay.
When I did not see this in the theater. Mm-hmm. I rented it mm-hmm. from the now defunct video store when I lived in Greenpoint mm-hmm. called Photoplay.
Yep.
I thought that the guy didn't have good follow-up questions when he was talking to Varg.
Okay.
I think that, you know, they didn't... I feel like they kind of... skim the surface with the story with him. And who, like I said, who knows what got edited out. Mm. But it's like when you interview someone, there's like the first question and then there's like two or three follow-ups based on what that guy says. I feel like he didn't ask those second and third, secondary and like tertiary questions that would have developed like a richer story. You know, I feel like Fenriz was like an open book. I feel like he was just like,
Just
put a microphone in front of him and he just goes, you know?
You could watch that guy talk about insurance. I mean, he's so animated and
personable. But Varg, because Varg does have, there's a lot of heat on him for his viewpoint. And
things. He was interviewed in prison. He was interviewed in his room in prison.
He was still incarcerated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred to have the guy ask him more difficult questions, you know what I mean? And I think that he lobbed a bunch of home runs to him in the movie.
Now, before this, though, this was a bit of a turning point for me with Varg, seeing him in this movie. I guess I'd always kind of held this belief about what went on that night and about whether or not how premeditated it was and, you know... how much of a jerk he was and whatnot. I almost felt like watching that. I was like, I feel like this guy might be telling the truth about what went on. You know what I'm saying? Like that it was a struggle that he didn't kind of just go in there and start stabbing him and that they fought, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know. I felt like the way he was very convincing in his depictions of the night. And from then on, I always remembered that about him, like about how very like, you know, he didn't seem as if he was lying to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I neither one of us were there.
Right, we'll never know. You know, we'll never really know.
I go on record as saying I think that Varg's music in Burzum is like incredible, and I think mm-hmm. that he has contributed.
Oh yeah.
So much to extreme music and black metal, and just like you know the whole culture of metal. You know.
Yes.
But on the other hand, you know, he's a murderer. Whether or not you agree with his church burnings, it's still a felony, mm-hmm. you know. And I don't agree with his racial, like, his views on race. And,
of course,
you know. But that, once again, that doesn't mean that I can't, you know, respect his music and his creative abilities, you know. So I like to, have... of a perspective, like a very realistic perspective about Burzum, you know what I mean? And, I'm sure that throughout time, there's been artists who've had, you know, very controversial viewpoints, have been felons, you know, James Brown, you know, he's like a felon, you know what I mean? Yeah. Love James Brown, you know what I mean? The truth, what actually happened with between him and Euronymous, no one's ever going to know the real story.
Only he knows, and a lot of people don't believe what he says.
Yeah.
And Euronymous knows, and he's dead. Yeah. So, I don't know.
And honestly, if he'd been, if something like that happened in the States, he probably would have gotten more than 21 years.
Right. Yeah. He got 21 years. He served 14. He got out.
Even if it was second degree murder, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever, unless it was like manslaughter or something like that, which I don't think it was, in my honest opinion, I don't think it was manslaughter.
And it's funny, we didn't bring it up in about Lords of Chaos, is they also portrayed Snorre Rooch from Thorns as like some idiot. Like, and I don't know if that was the case either. Snorre Rooch was the guy in the car with Varg, who, when they drove to Euronymous's apartment, and he actually ended up going to jail too as an accessory to murder.
Yeah.
He didn't really do anything, that guy. And he went to jail for a couple of years. Thorns, you know, pretty great black metal band as well. Definitely. In their own right.
Like industrial-esque sort of black metal.
Yeah, yeah. And he was in Mayhem for a hot minute too. They don't really put too much of a focus on him in this, although Varg does talk about him in Until the Light Takes Us. He talks about how for a minute thought that he was in on, you know, jumping him, whatever, and then he realized that he wasn't when he ran out of the apartment, you know, in a panic.
But just once again about this whole thing, I mean, you know, we know of stories of musicians who are in extreme music, you know, either hardcore or metal, you know, where they have murderous intentions with each other.
You
know what I mean? It's like, it's not unusual, I think, for something, you know, like people who despise each other so much because they were involved in something that was like special to them.
Yeah. You know? I think honestly, Euronymous and Varg were probably competing for to be the president, so to speak, of the crew, as they say.
Yeah, totally.
And I can guarantee you that, you know? But it went down really bad, you know?
Yeah,
you know. It went down historically bad and historic at the same time.
You know, but also, you know, there's consequences to everything you do. And that's, mm-hmm. Varg is, you know, sort of fulfilling whatever consequence to killing his friend, regardless if you're going to call it murder or not. Yeah. He took the life of Euronymous.
Oddly enough, the man seems very happy. You notice that about those video clips? He's got a beautiful wife. He's got like six kids living in the woods in the middle of France somewhere. And he seems very happy. And I don't know. I feel like yet another documentary can be made about his own life and bizarreness and his shit. There's a wonderful documentary in there somewhere, I would say.
Right, but would he ever agree to do
something
like that?
No, never. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He never would. Yeah. He never would. Now, the other cool thing about Until the Light Takes Us, there's a very bad thing about it, but the other cool thing about it is I feel like you will come out of it with a lot more knowledge of black metal and that kind of whole era than if you say just watch Lords of Chaos.
Yeah.
And you'd be armed with more truthful information and a little more insight as to who these people were. And you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
they're not cartoon characters. No. Until the Light Takes Us.
No, one's a documentary. Until the Light Takes Us is an actual fact-based documentary, mm-hmm. involving, interviews with the actual people.
Yep.
And I think that is if you've never, I mean, I find it hard to believe that anyone listening to this doesn't know about black metal, but
right, there might be.
If you're anyone's out there that is getting into all this stuff, start, if you're going to watch something, start with Until the Light
Takes
Us. Watch
that first and then Lords of Chaos.
Yeah. And if you want to get real crazy, read the book Lords of Chaos, which is completely, they just basically took the title from the book and slapped it on that movie because it really only tells a fraction of what the book gets into.
Another really good documentary on YouTube for free right now is called Once Upon a Time in Norway. from 2007. Watch that. It's very good. It talks to all the old Mayhem guys. Very interesting. And another good one, Pure Fucking Mayhem from 2008. I have the DVD. That's also, you can watch the whole thing on YouTube. Those two are also really, really good about Mayhem in particular, but it's a part of this whole story, I would say. The director of Until the Light Takes Us, the late Aaron Eitz, he actually passed away in 2016 of cancer, this guy.
He was only 46.
Sad. By all accounts, he was like a really nice guy, and everyone involved in the movie was like sent these nice tributes about him when he passed. They took this interesting approach with an artist from Norway who was, again, not a metal guy, but kind of taken with the whole cultural phenomena, quote unquote, of what had happened, right?
I fucking hated that part.
Yeah, and did this whole kind of like, you know, he did these paintings and had the photographs and like this whole art showing about black metal. And Fenris goes to visit it. He travels a great distance to visit it. Because they show him on the train and blah, blah, blah. And he gets hassled by police on the train, which is kind of an interesting scene. You know, everybody in Norway looks so normal. And then there's just him. Like, you know, he looks like the freak. It's like really interesting. But you could see the look on Fenris's face as he's looking at his friends on the wall, his dead friends, his living friends, what is a part of his own history.
Yep.
He is fucking hating every minute of
it. He's getting like a massive...
It's very real. It's very like...
He's getting a massive douche chill.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. A really good scene. And then he does a very... You know, he gives the... handshakes
very
the
European,
artist guy.
Very European thing.
Very, you know... And then looks around a little more. He doesn't say a word to the guy. He doesn't ask the guy any questions. He's just like, I am done. Like, you know what I'm saying? That was a great scene. He was just like, I'm done.
Yeah. The other nauseating scene, which I found this kind of, you know, when you really think about it, it's actually pretty offensive, was the scene with Frost and his whole performance art.
Yeah, thing. Now, okay, Satyricon... Fantastic band. I love Satyricon. They're in my top 10 Norwegian black metal bands, 100%. They are a little after this crew, though. They were not necessarily...
Yeah, they weren't the
They're
original.
A little younger, so they weren't necessarily... They were not a part of the Black Circle. They were not. They may have been metalheads then, and Satyricon was kind of forming, but they were not a part of that crew. But... They have, you know, they're very well respected. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and also he's in 1349 too.
Right? Yeah, no.
Like, you know,
but the fact that Frost agreed to this to me was always the weirdest part about this. Right?
Two things: the fact that they asked that they had any that it was even in the movie, I thought was fucking stupid.
Yeah. Okay.
And number two, the fact that he agreed
they
to be part
agreed
of that
to it as a member of Satyricon, as a respected black metal guy, Satyricon. This is in the 2000s. Satyricon already have like 5-6 albums out at least at this point. They're a well-established band. But I guess, I don't know. Frost seems like a weird dude, so maybe he just wanted to do it, right?
Yeah, but the whole thing, the actual performance just seemed like some geek show, really. Like, all right, let's watch this guy.
Cutting himself up
and wearing
stabbing a
paint.
Couch.
Yeah, it was this kind of like...
It was weird.
Very, very exploitive and... It took place in Milan, Italy, you know, in the Mediterranean, which is, you know, far removed from the cold northern climes that black metal is generally known for. And the people that went to this exhibit were just like art people. They weren't even like music fans.
And you don't even, I guess, I don't know. There's no point where even Frost talks about like why he wanted to do it or how. Like, it's kind of weird. It's just kind of like he shows like the art guy meets him and they're talking somewhere and it's just like. Okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, I thought that was interesting. The only reason I think this is in the movie was to show what, like, how other people maybe and about how black metal really has become this weird part of Norway's culture and it has gotten into the wrong hands. You know what I'm saying? Maybe that was, like, on purpose. Like, you know, to show, okay, we're going to talk to Varg at length and Fenris at length, and then we're just going to kind of show you this weird side of what, you know, is in the wake of it. I don't know. Is that maybe?
I think that was a real mistake to have any of that stuff in the movie, only because the most compelling part about that film was the interplay between Varg and Fenris.
Yeah.
I would have been happier just to have the whole thing focused on those two and their friendship and what, you know, how things came together.
You could probably make make a cut of the
movie. You can cut the movie, yeah, exactly.
And that's the movie. That would be interesting. It would be like 20 minutes shorter. Here's another thing of note, listeners. Varg and Fenris were friends and they respected each other. And this ended their friendship. And you could see that I don't know, what I got from it is that they kind of miss each other in a weird way.
Do you think, this film ended their friendship or the
incident? No, the incidents did.
Okay, yeah.
The incidents kind of did. Although they did maintain a correspondence in the beginning. They did. And it just fell off. Because Varg co-wrote lyrics on their last record, which was 93, 94. Varg co-wrote lyrics on the fourth Dark Throne record, Transylvanian Hunger.
Yeah.
Which came out in 94. Which to me says it was kind of done in 93, 94. It came out in 94. So they were still friends. And Varg has also made it a point of saying how much today, in recent interviews on his YouTube thing, how much he likes Fenris. I respect him. I like him. And, you know, like, it's interesting, right?
He's like
don't talk to each other, though. They say they don't talk to each other.
Well, he's like, Fenris is literally one of the only people from that scene that Varg doesn't talk shit about.
Right.
That he has he's like slandered every band and every person.
Yeah, the guy's an immortal. He's dissed.
It's kind of easy to diss immortal, really.
Well, no, like he said, all those guys were rats except Fenris. That's what he says. He says, ultimately, anyone who was ever brought in for questioning on anything threw him under a bus except for Fenris, which is interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, you could see kind of the sadness and I feel like between him seeing all that shit in the art gallery and then him talking about his friends in the old days, it's just kind of like, wow, it did something. You know what I'm saying? It had an effect on him.
Yeah.
You could see that. Varg is a little more kind of like stoic and a little more kind of, you know, about it, whatever, less emotion.
Very much less
emotion, emotional. But it's there too, especially in the current years, because he's done the whole things about how Fenris, like on his YouTube, which is very interesting to watch. As a documentary, I give this a 4 out of 5. I mean, it's not amazing. It's not perfect. It's very good. It's definitely a must see for black metal fans, and definitely a must see for people who have kind of newly stumbled into this whole thing via the Lords of Chaos movie. Would you agree?
I definitely think that if you saw Lords of Chaos and you think that's the real deal story, that you should watch this. And once again, read the Lords of Chaos book and watch those other documentaries that Mike referenced. I thought aside from the things I just mentioned, which I didn't like about it, like the art stuff, you know, it also just the production was, I thought the sound was terrible.
The other sad thing is that it is not in HD. And when you watch it, it's on Amazon Prime. It doesn't look very good.
The sound is awful.
The sound's bad. I have a DVD of it. And it's only slightly better, the DVD, than the actual Amazon Prime version. It would be very opportune time for a Blu-ray or an HD upgrade.